Welcome back to the Final Four is not on the schedule. He is Rod, I am Cameron, and Michigan State starts the Big Ten play with a road visit to Minnesota, Minneapolis, to take on the Gophers, 7-0 coming into this season. Of course, Rod, they got a new coach, Ben Johnson, as Patino heads off to New Mexico State, or is it just New Mexico?
New Mexico.
I forget. New Mexico. Ben Johnson played at Minnesota. Recently, he had been assistant for Xavier for three seasons. And he's got a major rebuild here. They lose Mashburn, went to follow Patino to New Mexico. Booth Gotch goes back to Utah after coming from Utah. They lost Brandon Johnson to DePaul, Cal Shear to Iowa State, Marcus Carr to Texas.
Yeah, that's the big one.
So, I mean, they really have had a deal here. Despite that, 7-0 to start, 90th in KenPom overall.
It's a total rebuild. You know, I believe in terms of their playing group, there's one guy who's back, Eric Curry, who's starting for them at center. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
They've – and usually these kind of situations are very, very rough. What has changed, and frankly has changed that dynamic and means that a Big Ten level team should never be in absolute scorched earth territory again, is the portal.
Yeah.
You know? And right now, I heard somebody, I can't remember who it was, who made this comparison, but they're absolutely right. When you look at Minnesota right now, what they look like is a mid-major all-star team. And I don't mean that like, wow, they're even better than, you know, some mid-major teams that we see make an NCAA tournament run. They're not that good. But it's a roster that looks a lot like you would see from better end mid-major teams. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that just in terms of talent. I also mean that in terms of their size, because the fact is they're very small. So, but having said all that, there's far, far, far more talent here than Minnesota would have had if this kind of situation had happened even, say, 4 years ago. You know?
Yeah.
Go back and remember what Indiana looked like when Tom Crane took over after the Kelvin Sampson fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody transferred out, even in that era where guys would have to sit out a year. That's the thing. You don't know if all those guys would have left if they would have been looking at sitting out a year. But, you know, it happened in those days, too, where there'd be a coaching change and rosters would just leave, you know. They'd mm-hmm. just be decimated, even when guys had to sit out a year. You know, that Indiana team that Tom Crean had in his first year was one of the worst from a talent perspective, maybe the worst that I've ever seen in the Big Ten. It wasn't his fault. I mean, he got those guys to play hard, and they were, you know, at times they were competitive because of it, but there was just no talent. This is not that scenario, because Ben Johnson could look at that, say, all right, we're losing all these guys, and who knows? Some of them may have been, I don't recall all the timing. I'd have to go back and check. I didn't care that much. But it's possible that some of those guys are guys that Ben Johnson just didn't want. You know, I think most of them he probably would have retained if he'd had the choice. But those guys cleared out. Okay. He had time to go out and seek replacements. The mid-major all-star part of it, too, is that he wasn't able to get really high major transfers. So the guys he's got are from places like George Washington is kind of a mid-major plus. They're an A-10 school, so that's not quite at that level. But, you know, Lafayette, I'm trying to recall some of the other places their guys have come from. But it's
William and Mary.
Yeah. So it's a lot of that. It's a lot of guys from mid-major programs who are stepping up to the Big Ten level. Now, look, so far so good. You mentioned they're 7-0. I actually, yesterday was the first time I got to see an entire game. I watched them play at Mississippi State. Saw Rocket Watts play. It was, you know, okay at best for Rocket. He has not lit the world on fire, in case you haven't been, any of our listeners haven't been paying attention. I think he was 2 for 5 from 3. He had 8 points, no assists. You know, it was kind of what we saw last year. But to me, he looks a step slower than he used to. But anyway, to get back to the game, Minnesota had big leads throughout a lot of that game and then let it slip away and really had to scrap and claw to hold them off. Any road win at a Power 5 school is a good one, and they've got two. They beat Pitt, who might be the worst Power 5 team in the country. They beat them in the Big Ten ACC Challenge at the buzzer. And then they held off Mississippi State. I think it's unclear how good Mississippi State is. I've seen them play a couple times this year. I don't think they're necessarily an NCAA tournament team. But, hey, road wins are road wins. And if you told me that Minnesota was going to have two Power 5 road wins at this point in the season, coming into the year, I probably wouldn't have believed it just because I wasn't very confident in what they had assembled, you know, on their roster. But, you know, look, give them their due. I mean, I think that Ben Johnson has at least got enough on hand and has got to these guys well enough in terms of how hard they're playing that, you know, Minnesota should be able to set an expectation that they can at least be competitive. I'm not sure how much they're going to win in the Big Ten this year, but, you know, I thought they were almost certainly going to be the worst team in the league, and I don't know about that anymore. I mean, Rutgers has just been abysmal, just awful. It's sad to see because Steve Peichel had to fight so hard to get that thing to a tournament level, and it just appears to have all collapsed on them, even with some key guys back. So they might be they'd be the team that on paper looks the worst right now, that's for sure. But, you know, Minnesota, who knows? You know, they might be able to avoid the basement. I think that alone would be a victory for Ben Johnson in his first year, given he had no time to really do any high school recruiting of any substance.
And not to get us sidetracked here, but we hadn't really mentioned the Mark Turgeon stepping down at Maryland. You'd been touching on that for a little while.
This is kind of
surprising, though.
Timing was surprising, but I'll tell you what. My feeling had been, but we've been talking about it here for at least a couple of years. And I thought 2 years ago he might have bought himself a little time by finally winning a share of a Big Ten title. And then last year, when he really didn't have much to work with, he had a deeply flawed roster, and you can blame that on him. But the fact is, he had a deeply flawed roster. He had no size, didn't look like he had a lot in the way of offensive material to work with. And he got that. Do you remember those two games Michigan State played against them? They were unpleasant.
Yeah.
Because Maryland just punked Michigan State with their toughness. You know, that team had an ethos about it, a style of play. They bought in and were gritty and tough in a way we don't normally associate with Maryland. And so I really thought, you know, okay, he brought in a lot of transfer talent, and we talked about it here in the season preview that, hey, they might not be as good. On paper, they look a lot better. It looks like the quote-unquote talent is improved, but that team had such a dynamic about it, and with Morsell especially gone, that, and maybe that should have been a bigger sign than I think anybody was interpreting at the time. A guy who was a four-year player there, was their captain, was clear-cut the leader of that team, transferred out to Marquette instead of doing his COVID year there. Why? I don't know. But the story was that he felt he needed to go somewhere where he'd be a featured player offensively, and he is getting more shots at Marquette. He's scoring more and all that. But you wonder about it. And I did wonder, would that change actually be positive or not for Maryland? Well, so far the evidence is it's been very negative. I mean, they're a bad basketball team right now. I watched them yesterday get beat at home by Northwestern. And Northwestern's improved, but no, that's not a game you should lose at home. It's just not. And they're, I think Maryland is 5-4 now.
Yeah, they got 4 losses.
Yeah, it's spiraling. It's swirling the drain fast. You know, they've got a, they really need, and Danny Manning is the interim. You know, not a lot of reason to think it's going to get turned around this year. I mean, they've got some talent, so I suppose anything could happen. But getting back to Turgeon, I think with that start, it just kind of sealed his fate. I heard somebody, might have been on the Jeff Goodman on that Field of 68 podcast I was listening to, made the comment that, you know, if Turgeon really liked his team, like you'll hear Tom Izzo talk about that, like, yeah, I like this team. Mm-hmm. Even when they're struggling, he might say that about a group. If a coach likes his team, he's probably going to stick around because even if the going is tough, because he figures he might have a chance to turn it around. Mm-hmm. But Turgeon might not like this team. And he might have figured, hey, this isn't going to get a lot better. I've got abuse from all quarters in this fan base, which he's dealt with for years to varying degrees. I mean, basically the best thing you can say for Mark Turgeon and the Maryland fan base during the entire time they've been in the Big Ten is he has occasionally been able to quell the disturbances. That's the best you could say. They've never embraced him. They've never really felt, from what I can tell, they've never felt enthusiastic about him as a head coach. And so I think he just looked at that, maybe didn't love his team, figured, why prolong this? Why go through the headache of another 3-4 months with this when I can just end it? And so I think that's what happened. I think it's going to be fascinating to watch that job because, look, the truth is, in terms of the way most people evaluate these things, that is a great job. It really is. That school cares about basketball. They're in the Big Ten, obviously. They have nice facilities. And maybe most of all, they sit in one of the prime recruiting territories in the country, the DMV. I mean, and the funny thing is that for as good as Maryland's program has been over the years, I think there's a feeling, and it would be an accurate one in many ways, that they've never fully exploited it. They've had a lot of talent there, but I just mean the amount of great players. If you think of the truly great players that have come through that area over the last 20, 30 years, the fact is Maryland has missed on far more of them than they've gotten.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a kid like Carmelo Anthony, Kevin Durant. Those just start with those two guys. Maryland doesn't get either, you know? And as far as I can tell, wasn't ever really close.
And historically, they're like a top 10 program.
Well, I might differ with that. I'd say top 20. I'd say top 20 in terms of accomplishments. They got the one national title. They don't have a ton of Final Fours. They don't have a ton of regular season conference championships. Now, you know, look, the ACC and the Big Ten, it's not easy. But, you know, and that's where they've been. But, you know, they've always been a factor. I mean, I go back to, you know, my youth, Lefty Driesell was the guy there for forever. And they were always good, but they were kind of, you know, Carolina was always the heavyweight. And then, of course, Duke emerged. You know, Maryland was kind of in a next tier through a lot of the 70s and 80s with, say, NC State.
Mm-hmm.
And they, but those fans believe, my sense is, they believe they should be an elite program. And there is some basis for that. You know, that is, again, as I say, on paper, a great job. It is going to be very interesting to me to see what they do. Probably the worst scenario, honestly, would be that Danny Manning turns it around and they feel like they have to hire him, because I don't think that's a good long-term answer. But, you know, I've seen some media reports on what they might do. And I've seen suggestions that they might take runs at guys like Nate Oates or Chris Holtman that are at football first schools and figure, well, maybe, you know, you can't, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So maybe you take a shot. I don't think they're getting either of those guys. Frankly, I wouldn't take Holtman anyway, because I think Holtman I know people might disagree with me on this, but I think he's a half step better than Turgeon. I've said it here many times. I think he's underachieved in that job a bit. Mm-hmm. Maybe not as much as Turgeon had in his, but enough. You know, I don't think I'd make that move. Oates would be great, but I don't see why he'd move. So then, you know, you're talking about who's realistic. Well, one name that keeps getting mentioned, Kevin Willard at Seton Hall. I don't know how that fan base will feel about that. He's done a nice job, and Seton Hall's had a nice program since he's been there. But that's not, you know, heavyweight name. Mm-hmm. And I think those people feel they're entitled to a heavyweight. Whether they're going to get one is another question. Another name I haven't seen mentioned in any media talk, but I'd sure be looking at it if I were them, is Danny Hurley. Now, there's nothing saying you can get him, but look, UConn is not living in the same financial world that Maryland is. Big East does not equal Big Ten. UConn is a basketball-first school. I'm sure, I'll have to ask my brother-in-law, because he's a UConn fan and follows it closely. I'm sure they're compensating him well, and I'm sure they'd up the ante to some degree. But could Maryland just go out and straight out buy him? I don't know. I'd think about it. I think it would be a possibility. So that would be a name. Then you know, you start getting into other names, smaller schools, that kind of thing. And it's way too early to know on that stuff because, you know, we're just barely into December. By the time we hit March, there's going to be a mid-major darling or two, right?
Yeah, somebody will pop up.
I think the names that I would dismiss that I've seen, John Beilein, I don't think John Beilein is interested in getting back into college coaching. And if he was, I don't think he's going to come into the Big Ten and a job with the pressure of Maryland. You know, his thing, in a best-case scenario, you figure probably 3 years to get it up and running with the way he chooses to go about it, the way he recruits. I don't think he's a guy, even with the recruiting advantages in that job, that would just hit the ground running and there you go. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would take a little while, and he doesn't have the time.
He's getting up there.
Right. Yeah. So there's that. And then I think another name you'll probably hear a little bit is Rick Pitino. Look, never say never, but I'm just about ready to say never on that one because I just can't see how it can be justified. I mean, Maryland over the years has played it fast and loose on the rules stuff at times, but that's a mighty long bridge to get to Rick Pitino. One other name I'll mention that just I've seen mentioned in some of these lists and occurred, and when I thought about it, I thought, well, maybe Bruce Pearl, you know, there's a difference, I think, between him in that job at Auburn and Nate Oates at Alabama. And it's subtle, but I think that I could just imagine Bruce Pearl maybe being more willing to take that jump and perhaps Auburn being a little less willing than Alabama to battle on a financial front if it came to that. Not that they couldn't do it necessarily, but would they? You know,
yeah,
I think Alabama.
Bruce Pearl makes a decent amount of money. I think he's in like the top 15 or top 20.
Okay. But then the question is, you know, we're in this reality. We see the ceiling for football coaches going up seemingly every day. And I think it's true to some extent, not the same level, but for basketball as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So would Maryland, if they decided he was their guy, and look, he's a cheater. He always has been. But the guy's a very good basketball coach, too.
Yeah.
No mistake about that. If he got to Maryland, they'd win, you know. Would Maryland be willing to just go higher than Auburn would? I sense that Alabama may be at a point finally with Oates that they've decided they truly want to be a two-sport school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if somebody came calling, that's why there are other reasons for this too, but any talk about Nate Oates being a guy to succeed Tom Izzo whenever that time comes based on the fact that he coached at Romulus High School, I dismiss. But one of them is that. I don't think Nate Oates, I think maybe a Duke, Carolina, Kansas might be able to get him to move, but I think that's probably about it. I don't think he's going anywhere, and part of the reason I think that is I think Alabama likes the idea of being a two-sport school, joining that, you know, some of these other, Michigan State being one, Michigan, you know, a lot of the Big Ten is, obviously, but, you know, a Texas, Florida has been that way for a while. You know, I think Alabama likes that, and I think they probably, I could see them being willing to go to the financial mat a little harder than Auburn, but that's just a guess. I'm talking out of my rear end, really, on that. But it just, at first blush, I feel like Bruce Pearl would be more realistic. He's also a lot older, so, you know, there's limited upside from that perspective. You know, he's not a young guy, but, yeah, it's going to be interesting because that fan base, I'm quite sure, has pie-in-the-sky expectations about who the next guy is going to be. And I don't know. I think those answers that would satisfy everybody are few and far between. You know, they're not getting Tom Izzo. That's not happening. They're not getting Mark Few. They're not getting Chris Beard. You know, you start to get past those names, because now we're living in this world where the names I would have included on the list are not getting Roy Williams, they're not getting Coach K. Well, those guys aren't around anymore. They're not getting Bill Self, you know. So there just aren't many of them. Anybody you get is probably going to come with some question marks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the one thing we have seen, what the football has showed us, is if you show people the money – you may be able to get people that you would not have thought possible.
You know, here's one that just occurs to me. I haven't seen him mentioned at all. Would they be willing to break the bank and just throw, like, ungodly amounts of money at Scott Drew?
Jay Wright? Oh, I'll
you're not getting Jay Wright. Wright. You're not getting Jay Wright. But Scott Drew?
Oh, that's a possibility, yeah.
You know, Baylor has definitely emptied the vault to keep him. And they got a national title now, and you would think they'd move heaven and earth to keep him. But I don't know. I would, you know, I don't think he'd move, but, you know, might you take a shot if you were Maryland just to see? Maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, the fact is, all you got to do is look at the major jobs that have come open in recent years, like the last couple of years, and you see what happens. You know, Texas got lucky. Because Chris Beard was there, he was an alum, and he was at a place that could never match their financial wherewithal, you know, Texas versus Texas Tech. So, okay, they got lucky. UCLA ended up with Mick Cronin, which, you know, looks okay now, but nobody was happy about that there. Mm-hmm. He was nowhere near the top of their list. You know, Carolina and Duke had coach-directed decisions that they hired from within. You know, so we don't have a lot of examples of big, big, big name guys moving. Mm-hmm. I think that Maryland fans should be prepared for maybe a name that isn't tremendously exciting to them, you know, right out of the chute. I would at least think there's that possibility. But they had to move on. This was probably an inevitability at the end of the season. If it was going to continue going the way it was and is, Turgeon was probably going to get fired anyway. So why prolong it?
Yeah. Well, getting back to Minnesota, offense not so good, 144 overall compared to 68 for Michigan State. But they're a fairly solid shooting team, 36% from the three. They're 86th in the nation in effective field goal percentage, and they shoot 69 from the line. MSU is, by comparison, 36 from three, 71 at the line.
Yeah, I think that in watching them yesterday, it kind of feels very feast or famine to me, looking at them on offense. You mentioned 36.2% from three, a good part of the reason they are managing to be top 100 in field goal percentage, which is nothing to write home about, but it at least means you're not abysmal, is that three-point percentage. And to me, that's the deal. I mean, if they're hitting, Like, they went on a 14-0 run to start that game against Mississippi State. And at different points in the game, when they got it back out to a double digit in the second half, it was because they were just raining threes. But when the threes aren't falling, it's a struggle. They don't have a post game really at all. Their guards are not really of the sort that you worry a lot about them beating you to the basket. It's just kind of a three point shooting deal. The free throw shooting is okay, but, you know, I'm pulling this up here. I don't think I looked yesterday to see where they're at in terms of how often they're getting to the line. My sense was they're not getting to the line very much. They're number 267 in free throws as a percentage of their overall scoring, and they're 241 in free throw attempts divided by field goal attempts. So it's not good. They really are a team that's going to be largely based around the three in terms of their success, because that's just the kind of roster they've got.
Yeah, their offensive rebounding is second worst in the country.
It's terrible.
Second worst in the country at 15.7%.
Yeah. So just to, again, at the risk of belaboring this, to educate people what we mean by that, that means of all their missed shots, they're only getting an offensive rebound on 15.7 of them. So if you figure an average game is, you know, let's say an average Big Ten game is 60 shots from the floor, right? That would be
like a couple.
Yeah, that would be like 9 offensive rebounds. Probably. I'm sorry. That would be less than that. Because if you say the average Big Ten game, if you miss 35 to 40 shots, it's gonna be a single digit.
Single digit.
Yeah. It's not good. And again, they just don't have size. They're also not playing many people. That is something else that has got to be kept in mind in this game, is that it is a very shallow bench. I mean, we talked about that with regard to Toledo. This is even worse. So I think that's definitely something to be concerned about.
They aren't taking care of the ball, though. 14th in the nation in turnover percentage, with only 14% of their possessions ending in a giveaway.
Yeah, and I think that's the highlight for them. That's also a big part of the reason why this is an offense that's even grading out as well as it is, considering that they don't really have a lot else to speak of that would argue for good offensive performance. They're at least not giving possessions away. They're not getting extra possessions, certainly. You know, that's not happening because they're not hitting the offensive boards at all. But they're not giving them away, and so that helps their cause a little bit, that at least they're getting opportunities to score. You know.
Yeah, on defense it's a little better. 53rd overall. They've been great against the threes, only 23% against them. And they're top 100 in limiting attempts, so that's good. Against the twos, they're a little bit more pedestrian, 133rd in the nation. So it looks like they're protecting the three, taking care of the ball.
It's weird, too, because the limiting – I watched them, as I say, in the Mississippi State game, and they played a lot of zone. Yeah, anecdotally, I'd say maybe two-thirds, 75% of the time, it was a lot of zone. And,
oh, boy.
And so I don't understand, and it's not like it's a Syracuse, you know, weird matchup zone where they're actually extending out on the floor. It's not that. So I'm not quite sure why those numbers are held down. Mississippi State didn't seem to have any problem getting threes off, but I think this, those numbers are a little bit of fool's gold.
Mm-hmm.
Because looking at them, I think Big Ten teams are going to be able to move the ball and get good shooting opportunities from deep. The defense against twos is predictable because they don't have much size and you don't have to worry about a rim protection element. None of those guys are shot blockers, so you should be able to do some damage in the paint as well. But we saw how well that played out the last time for MSU against a Toledo team that was much, much worse against twos, and MSU just didn't really do anything there. I mentioned Minnesota is really shallow, and I suspect the zone is part of that too. Just preserve minutes for these guys. They are number 358 in the nation in bench minutes. So four of their starters average at least 35 minutes a game, and the one guy who doesn't is Curry, the big man, 6'9". And he only plays 28.5. So this is a team that just is trying to get everything they can out of those five starters. One thing that is helping them manage to do that is they don't foul. Mm. You know, we mentioned they don't draw a lot of fouls, but they also don't commit a lot of fouls. Teams are only scoring 13.8% of their points at the free throw line. So Minnesota is keeping their guys out of foul trouble, which means they can keep them on the floor. You know, I think all of that is kind of feeding into some of these decisions as to why they're playing zone, you know.
If we look at the starters, Peyton Willis, 6'4 senior, comes back to Minnesota after a one-year detour. I believe he was down at College of Charleston.
That's right.
And he averaged 17.4 points a game. 50 from the floor, 44, 59 from the line. And he leads them in assists with just under 4 a game. So he comes back to Minnesota.
Yeah. You know, he's been a key guy. He went crazy against Mississippi State from deep. So give him a lot of credit for that. He's had a nice year for them. 44% from three. That's kind of what he always was. It's just he's shooting it better. Decent, you know. The part of the problem is that I don't think he's really a point guard, and so that, you know, they don't really have a choice but to play him there, but it's going to limit all these things that I'm talking about in terms of how effective their offense can actually be. But a nice season thus far. He's also getting about 5 boards a game, so he's doing about as much as you could realistically expect out of him.
And then Luke Lowe, 6'4", senior transfer from William & Mary, averaging 6.9 points a game on 41, 18, and 78 from the line. And he's second in assists with 23 in 7 games and only 8 turnovers.
Yeah, you know, started 80 games at William & Mary, so one thing you can say is he's got a lot of experience, right?
Yeah.
The 3-point shooting is obviously a problem at 18 points a game, or 18% on the year. Decent job playmaking, and that's, you know, that's about where it ends.
Yeah. And then Jamison Battle, 6'7", 225-pound sophomore transfer from George Washington. So he's a Minneapolis native, and he leads them in scoring. 17.9 points a game, 48 from the floor, 34 from three, and 70 from the line.
I like him. You know, he's, as you said, he's a kid who is from Minneapolis. They got a couple of those. Went away to go to school at George Washington because I assume Minnesota didn't offer him. And he had 2 really good years. You know, last year he averaged 17.3 points a game for George Washington in the A-10. So, you know, you might not have expected he'd come in and do pretty much exactly the same thing at the Big Ten level, but it's not a total shocker that he's been productive. He was a guy early in that game against Mississippi State. He was just on fire. I mean, he took shots I didn't even think were good shots and hit them from deep. The 34% actually, when I went and looked at the numbers after watching that game, it surprised me it was that low, because he was, which then tells me he's just, you know, kind of a heat check guy. But he's a nice player overall. You know, he's got some good strength to him. His body's put together. He looks at home on a Big Ten court. Nice player, and definitely their best player right now. You know, leading him in scoring, second in rebounding. That's a nice combination. And he's got eligibility. He's not a one-year guy. He could do two more years there.
Oh, okay. So then EJ Stevens, 6'3", senior transfer from Lafayette. He's averaging 11.1 points a game. 42 from the floor, 45 from three, and 63 from the line.
Yeah. You know, this is what I mentioned, the mid-major all-stars, right? He's, you know, from Lafayette. He had a good year in the Colonial last year. So kind of following up on that, again, not, you know, the shooting numbers are there. He's not getting as high a volume as some other guys. I think they might want to think about doing that a little bit more.
16 points a game in the Colonial.
Yeah. He had a good year. He definitely had a good year. I think he was third team all league. Mm-hmm. So a nice player, you know, filling a role for them.
And then the one guy they have returning, Eric Curry, 6'9 senior, averaging 7.6 points a game, and leads them in rebounding, 6.3. Shooting 40% from the floor, hasn't taken any threes, and 80% from the line.
Yeah, I think with him, man, you're just happy for him that he's able to play. Because this is a guy who really, I mean, he goes back a long time. I'm positive of this. He's definitely in his fifth year. It might even be his sixth. I'd have to go back and look. He was on that team that beat Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament, which I think, am I right about this? Was that Miles?
He was there for 2000. Year? Yeah, he was there in 2017. Then he missed 18.
Okay, so 16, 17. Yeah, so he goes back a long time. He was early on. He was a guy that really had a lot of potential, because he had some spring to him. He had decent size. I remember he could shoot a little bit. The shooting has kind of gone away. Obviously the athleticism has been damaged because he's just not the same guy athletically. But you know, I think that if you're Minnesota, and really anybody, any fan of the game, you're happy that he's out there able to contribute and play. You know, that's the first thing. And you know, he gives it, look, it's a critical role for this team, because they just don't have any other size. So at least physically he can go out there and hang with some of the guys Michigan State's got, you know? So at least he brings you that.
And so the remaining season bench players, Sean Sutherland, 6'5", senior transfer from New Hampshire, but also a Minnesota native. He missed the Mississippi game, but he's shooting 9.2 points a game, 58 from the floor, just missed one three that he took, and 68 from the line in 19 minutes.
Yeah, weird, a perimeter player who doesn't shoot the three, but he's really it. Their bench, he's playing like 19 minutes a game. He's the guy. And if he can't play, then we don't know. He's got a knee injury. He's listed as day-to-day. That's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a real problem for Minnesota, because they just may not have anybody that they can turn to provide quality depth. And look, you're playing Michigan State. That is not a position you want to be in.
Yeah. The other big guy that they use, Charlie Daniels, 6'9", 230, he transfers in from Stephen F. Austin, just 1.6 points a game, two rebounds in 11 minutes.
Yeah. I had a bad pun in the preview. It said the Gophers went down to Texas. I read that now. It was confusing me for a second.
Right.
So I just
instead of the devil went down to Georgia. Yeah. This Charlie Daniels does not have a long beard, and he's not playing country music. He's instead a minimally effective big man reserve. So he gets the other minutes that Curry doesn't play, really, in the five.
He must be pissed at his parents. It'd be pretty sweet if you like had an awesome dunk and then did like a fiddle like running down the court the other way.
Something tells me that's not likely.
Not likely. And then Will Ramberg, 6'5 freshman, averaging 3 minutes so far.
Yeah, these last two guys, and he's one of them I mentioned, only because they have played in most of their games, even if just for a few minutes. And it's hard to project out what it's going to look like in Big Ten games for a team like this, because you can say, well, they don't want to play guys beyond the top seven. But, you know, the way the Big Ten goes, foul trouble, and if Michigan State gets into transition and turns into a little bit of a running game, they may not have much choice but to do that, you know? So they might have to go a little deeper than they've been going thus far just because the situations dictate it.
And then they got Abdulai Chum, 6'4 junior, a JUCO transfer with freshman eligibility. He's getting 4 minutes a game.
Right. Same rationale. Same rationale. These last two guys are not playing much, but, you know, just the way I look at it, it's possible that they might see a few minutes out of necessity, if no other reason.
Yeah. So we look at the keys. Rod, turnovers is the first one. Minnesota's really good at limiting theirs, so we may not have the luxury of a good differential this game.
Well, that's the thing. You know, if you're Michigan State, you figure – there are some areas where you can really hopefully do damage. And the two that we talk about as being most important are turnovers and rebounds. Rebounding, I'd be very surprised if Michigan State doesn't have a distinct advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But turnovers could even that up for Minnesota. And that's what you can live with them having an advantage. You just can't have it be something that's apocalyptically bad. You know, something like 14-11, not a big deal. You know, if it's 18-8, that's a bigger deal. And so that's what Michigan State needs to be careful about, is they can't mistake their way into keeping Minnesota in this thing.
Mm-hmm. And then zone offense. I haven't seen much zone. I think maybe Butler threw zone at them a couple times.
They did.
And they took care of it pretty easily.
Yep.
But, I mean, if they're going to play it consistently all night, maybe be something to look at.
Yeah, and again, I'm not sure if Ben Johnson wants to do that or if he feels he's got to, and I can see the argument for the got to side.
He feels like he's got to
keep these five guys on the floor. So what else can you do, right? You want to do what you can to preserve them, not put them in situations where they're fouling. The bottom line is, how well does Michigan State execute? Now, we have just not seen Michigan State go against a ton of it. So we don't even know yet for sure. Like, how are they going to operate? Who's going to be the guy in the middle of the zone? I did see them use Malik Hall that way. I think that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think Max Christie could definitely – do that job, but then the problem is you don't have him on the perimeter as a shooter, you know? So you have to balance these things. Is where is he best utilized? Is he best fit as a guy who can cash in open shots, or is he better in the middle of that thing breaking it down? You know, and then the other candidate probably is Joey, but you know, that's where you have some hesitation with where his confidence is right now. In terms of skill sets, he should be perfect for it. But I'm not sure how he'll function. So I would hope that we'd see a lot of Malik in that role, and then sprinkling in some other guys. But whichever way it goes, the key is no different than it is against pretty much any zone. You need to get into the gaps in order to force that defense to collapse, to contract, to distort. And then from there, as long as you've got good kicks, you're going to get open shots, you know. And so that means, obviously, the guy who's in that free throw line extended role has to be good. But it also means that there's something on Michigan State's guards to maybe, via the dribble, get into those gaps, too, at times. So that's where Tyson Walker, A.J. Hogard are going to come into play, and those guys are going to have to execute, you know. But it's critical. And then, obviously, they have to, in conjunction with that, they got to do what they've been doing for the last five games. They got to make shots.
Yeah,
you know, when there are open looks, and Minnesota is, I think teams are shooting 23% from three against them. That's not just because of what they're doing defensively. That's some luck in there. But the fact remains, you're on the road in a hostile environment for only the second time this year, and you got to hit shots when the opportunities are there. So,
and then the third key is boards.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Minnesota is not going to do anything on the offensive glass.
Yeah.
So, God help us if Michigan State is not controlling the defensive points. The other end, Michigan State is not a great offensive rebounding team, but a pretty good one. Minnesota is an okay, at best, defensive rebounding team. There should be opportunities for second chances. And that's where you hope. If they can keep the turnover differential limited, you would hope that Michigan State could actually carve out a significant advantage in those two areas combined by really, really pounding the offensive boards, and maybe, you know, maybe a 5, 6, 7 offensive rebound edge.
Tempo is number four.
Yeah, important, obviously, for a couple of reasons. One, you always want as many easy baskets as you can get. And two, with a team that is this shallow, you want to push the tempo as much as possible to try to get in and force them to playing guys they don't want to play. Mm-hmm. And just having the guys that they do play be less effective when they are out there. In any Big Ten game, it is easier said than done to go out and run, just because coaches – are so well prepared, and they know what Michigan State wants to do, and they usually are able to do a very good job in game planning. Minnesota, it's a new staff, but the advantage they have is already, we know, in terms of style of play, they don't commit to even trying to offensive rebound. Mm-hmm. So they should be okay in terms of floor balance. If you're MSU, though, the same things apply as they always do. You want to run and play as fast as you can, because that's what you do, and you want to keep those habits ingrained. And even if Minnesota is doing a consistent job of getting back, you know what? Maybe that 15th possession in the second half, they're not focused and they're not able to do it. And because you're consistent in the way you're pushing it, you get an opportunity. You know, that's where it starts to matter.
Yep, and that's the fifth key, the last 10 minutes. You'd like to think guys like Curry aren't going to be that effective that late in the game if they're playing 25, 30 minutes.
All of them. I mean, he's the one who's playing the least, 28 and a half. The other guys are all 35 plus. So I think the goal, I mean, seriously, they all Willis is like 38 plus. I mean, he's never coming off the floor, basically. So that's what I said. Like, he's their point guard. I don't think he's really a point guard. I know he's not. But they don't have any other options. So it's kind of tough. I think that for this game, though, what you want to set as your goal if you're Michigan State is try to run as much as you can, make it as fast-paced a game as you can. But even when you're in a half court, you want to extract a physical toll. You don't want this to be an easy game for Minnesota to play, right? And you can do that in a number of ways. You could do that by being physical. You can do that by just being really hard to to go against offensively, which Michigan State should be. I mean, they're number two in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency for a reason. And the goal there being with a team with such a shallow bench that the last 10 minutes, whether it's a combination or a cumulative effect of physical and mental exhaustion, that you're able to come out ahead in that way. And the last 10 minutes, you're facing a team that just doesn't have much left in its tank. That's what you want.
Okay. Well, this one's Wednesday, 9:00 on Big Ten Network. Any final thoughts heading into the Big Ten season?
You know, we've already seen some interesting games. I mentioned Northwestern beating Maryland. Not many people would have called that on the road at the beginning of the year. I was actually really shocked, and as we're recording this, I'm watching the tail end of Illinois-Iowa, and, you know, Iowa I've really been suspicious of. Iowa and Minnesota are the two teams, and Wisconsin. Those are the three teams that I didn't expect a ton of that have all gotten off to, at least on paper, really, really nice starts. Iowa went into Purdue without their best player, without Keegan Murray, and I figured, hey, that could be a 30-point wipeout in Mackey. It was not. It was a very competitive game. Iowa home tonight against Illinois is up, but it's tight. They've got Keegan Murray back. And although I'm still not buying in, the fact is that they've been more competitive than anyone thought. Wisconsin has been better than anyone thought. Minnesota, their Michigan State's opponent, which is why I'm mentioning all this. They don't have a string of super impressive wins, but they do have two road wins already against Power 5 opponents, even if they're not good. They're still Power 5 opponents. You know, if you're Michigan State, you look at the way the Big Ten is and you say, well, this is one you got to get if you want to, you know, if you want to compete at the top of this conference, right?
Yeah.
You only have so many opportunities where you feel good about your chances to get a road win, you know, because most times you're going to be up against it. You know, this is one of those times. And so Michigan State, for that reason, for all the other reasons we've talked about, that you want to continue this early season momentum and make sure that good performances are rolling into more good performances and you're building something. So it is important. I mean, I'm not going to lose my mind if somehow they find a way to lose it. But this really is one you want to get if you're MSU. And it's a Big Ten opener, so you always want to be 1-0.
Yeah. Okay. We'll leave it at that and hit everybody back after the game. Until then, the Final Four is not on the schedule.